That's an unfortunate misconception that I've been working hard to correct,
Landon said, and I stared at the radio, not liking that the priest's professional tutored voice had lost none of its elven persuasion through my car's speaker. I was parked at the curb outside the church, waiting for Ivy and Jenks, who were late, late enough that my to-go coffee was gone and I was down to listening to the news to try to stay awake. Landon spouting his lies on Cincy's radio circuit was better than a double espresso.
So you claim it wasn't poor spellcasting that sent the rescued souls of the undead back to the ever after, but Mr. Callimach?
The interviewer said, and I drummed my fingers on the steering wheel, imagining Landon's fair features and thin lips curving up in a reassuring and fake smile.
I do.
Landon's confidence was absolute as he lied.
The spell to return the undead their souls was cast by the entire elven religious duar and our political enclave. It fell due to Callimach's tampering, which is why the witches joined us on our second attempt.
Ha! I exclaimed, my voice coming back hard in my tiny car. Trent didn't mess with your lousy charm. It was bad spellcasting, hack, I added, then angrily changed the channel. Possible food contamination being tied to the recent spate of domestic assaults in the greater Cincinnati and Hollows area, having just this morning taken its first human victim. I turned the radio off. Food contamination did not lead to violence, unless it was the now extinct T4 Angel tomato. Leaning back, I stared at the car's ceiling and tried to let go, as Jenks would say. Landon had been spouting his alternate version of reality for months. It was frustrating that no one, not Al or Dolly or Trent, had come forward to say anything contrary. Every time I brought it up, Trent would pull me into a hug and tell me that things were being said behind closed doors, and that to make the argument public would make me a scapegoat. Nervous, I tucked a tickling strand of my curly red hair behind an ear and fiddled with my empty coffee cup. A gentleman's agreement between Trent and Landon to keep my name out of the news was more than likely, and my name had been suspiciously absent. Not that I was complaining. I didn't know how much more collateral damage my life could take. Dropping the empty cup into the holder, I settled back to wait. The ticking of my shiny red Mini's engine cooling in the sunny morning was a gently slowing rhythm, and I felt myself relax despite Landon's lies. Walking into the silence that gripped the church without Ivy and Jenks had all the appeal of eating toasted butterfly wings. Besides, it was warm in my car, and I didn't think the heat was on in the church yet. Late November was cold in Cincinnati, and I squinted up through the tinted band of windshield until I found Biz's lumpy shape sleeping beside the steeple. New gray shingles covered the hole the elven goddess had blown through the roof in frustration, but the kitchen and living room were still missing, and boards still covered the busted windows. The colored glass that Jenks had been so proud of glittered like jewels among the lengthening grass and fallen leaves. "Please bring coffee," I whispered, as my head thumped back against the headrest and I closed my eyes. I'd gotten up way too early for this, but Ivy was coming off of third shift at the IS, and David had been available. Jenks, of course, was up, but my sleep had been restless. My dreams running the gamut from Ray grown up and marrying a Rosewood baby to me in an insane asylum being visited by Trent. I was tired, and almost immediately I felt myself begin to fall asleep, the familiar sounds of my street soothing after 2 months of living on Kiston's boat, the Solar, now docked at the quay next to Piscari's old restaurant. My eyes began to twitch, and I slipped into REM sleep eerily fast. Stray threads of memory sparked. Ivy and me having coffee in Piscari's stripped-down kitchen, waking up beside Trent and seeing his smile as he watched me open my eyes. Jenks and me sharing a quiet moment, me in my robe and him sitting on my coffee pot, trying to get warm enough to fly. Snippets of conversation that never happened slowly evolved into actions that never occurred as I began to dream.
"One of us isn't going to make it off this boat,"
my dream Jenks said, black sparkles falling from him as he drew his garden sword and flew at me.